Parshas Lech Lecha, we begin the story of the Jewish people. Avram has his epic journey from Haran to Eretz Canaan. And there's an interesting detail that is mentioned, and more to the point, repeated, as the Torah describes the journey in the beginning of the Parsha. We take a look in Perek Yudbeis, Pasuk Dalet, as Avram embarks on the journey. Vayelech Avram. Avram went, Kasher Diber Elav Hashem, as Hashem had told him. Vayelech Ito Lot. Lot went with him. The Avram bin Chamesh Shanim v'Shivim Shana b'Teso Mecharon. Avram was 75 when he left Haran. So Pasuk Dalet tells us that Avram went and Lot went with him. The next pasuk, Pasuk Hey, Vayikach Avram. Avram took as who did he take? As Sarai Ishto, he took Sarai his wife. Ves Lot ben Achiv, Lot his nephew. Ves Korachu Shama Sherechoshu, all of their property, all of their possessions. Ves Hanepesh Asher Osu B'Charan, and all of those that they had influenced and brought to godliness. Vayetul Alechet Arza Kanan, Vayavou Arza Kanan. And what strikes us here is that the Pasuk has made a point of telling us in two consecutive psukim that it was Lot that went with Avram. In Pasuk Dalet, Lot went with him. In Pasuk Hey, Avram took him. Well, if Avram took him, then Lot went with him. If Lot went with him, then Avram took him. Why is it a zoche, so to speak, to this double reference? And there's a very interesting answer to this question, which is found in the classic Pirush on the Torah, the Maasei Hashem. The Maasei Hashem, Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, one of the early Acharonim, his Pirush, I would say, in modern times, suffers from length. That is to say, it's longer than most people have patience for. That is to say, it takes more than one page sometimes to find out what the point is. And these are, it's one of the classics that has, in a sense, fallen into disuse for this reason, along with others like the Al-Sheikh and the Abarbanel, and so on and so forth. But that, of course, is our loss. And the Maasei Hashem says that the truth of the matter is, Avram, or traveling with Lot, or more correctly, Lot traveling with Avram, is no simple matter. It's not straightforward at all. And the reason why is because if you look at the first pasuk of the parsha, Vayom Hashem el Avram, Hashem tells Avram lech lecha, to go. And where is he meant to go from? And also from whom is he meant to go from? He's told to go me'artzecha, from your land, mimoladetecha, from your birthplace, mibeis avicha, from your father's house, el haaretz asher ar'echa. Avram is told to cut ties and to leave behind his father's household. Now his father's household includes Lot. Lot is his nephew from his brother. He leaves Nahor behind. He leaves Haran behind. Well, Haran was not passed on by that stage, died by that stage. But Lot is actually part of those that Avram is meant to move away from. And yet somehow Lot comes with him. Lot is actually a remnant of Beis Avicha, coming with and being part of Lech Lecha. That sounds almost like a contradiction. And the point is, since Lot comes with Avram, Avram takes him, he doesn't wish to refuse. But the question then is, does it make a difference? As if to say, are there any ramifications or consequences of the fact that when Avram left, he didn't fully leave his father's household behind, not entirely? And the answer, as we will see, is it appears, yes, there were consequences. And let us see how this plays out. At a certain stage, if we take a look at the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel, we will see that there's become something of a dispute between Lot's shepherds and Avram's shepherds. Pasuk Zion of Perek Yud Gimel. Vayhi Riv, Ben Ve'e Mikne Avram, Uvein Ve'e Mikne Lot. There's a dispute between them. Dispute breaks out. Now, it's interesting, firstly, before we discuss what was the nature of the dispute and what was the content of the dispute, it's interesting to note the timing of the dispute. After all, isn't it true that initially Lot is faithfully following Avram? And at this stage, or by this stage, his shepherds are in discord with those of Avram. He doesn't really seem to be in line with Avram's program anymore. What happened? Well, says Ma'aseh Hashem and other Mefarshim after him, Lot has become somewhat disillusioned, shall we say, with Avram's vision, in the sense that initially everything was promised to Avram. Things will be well, journey to the promised land, everything will go wonderfully there. And so Lot joined in. He's idealistic and looking forward, optimistic. But what happens when they get there? It's a setback from the very beginning. They come, there's a famine in the land. Well, that doesn't sound like what was promised. So Avram, being Avram, knows how to weather a situation like that. But Lot already takes a knock. His enthusiasm is flails somewhat. And then when they go down to Mitzrayim, they don't have such a pleasant stay there. Sarai gets taken, and Sarai, not to forget, is not only Avram's wife. She's also Lot's sister. It's a bit of a distressing situation. They're not living particularly securely. And these are the experiences that meet them as they come to Eretz Canaan. And that means it takes a toll on Lot's enthusiasm. And by the time they come back from Mitzrayim, Lot is no longer that interested in being part of Avram's program. And it's very interesting to see how this is reflected and expressed in the words of the post. If we take a look at Pasuk Dalet of Perek Yud Gimel, we have skipped over the sojourn in Mitzrayim, or passed over, perhaps more appropriately. But they're back. And when they come back to Eretz Canaan, Pasuk Dalet says, El Mekoma Mizbeach, Asher Oso Sham Barishona, Avram returns to the site of the original Mizbeach. In a sense, his faith has been vindicated, and he's back. Vayikra Sham Avram B'Shem Hashem. Avram there calls B'Shem Hashem. And to call B'Shem Hashem means that he proclaims Hashem's message and proclaims Hashem, the way of life that Hashem wishes for people. That's all called Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. Now the truth is, this is not the first time that Avram is described as doing this. Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. We find a similar expression in the very beginning of the Parsha, in Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Ches. If we take a look there. Vayatek misham hahara, Avram is moving around within Eretz Canaan, Mikedem, Leveis El, Vayeta Halo, east of Beit El, Beis El Miyam, by Mikedem, Vayiven Sham Mizbech Hashem, he builds a Mizbech for Hashem, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. So in Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Ches, we have the expression Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. In Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Dalet, we have Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. There's just one difference. The second time in Yud Gimel Dalet, it says Vayikra Sham Avram B'Shem Hashem. Now the word Avram is seemingly redundant because he is the noun, the proper noun that we have been discussing, which means that it is entirely appropriate just to say Vayikra Sham B'Shem Hashem, because that's the one that we're referring to. If Vayikra B'Shem Hashem would mean Avram, why does the Pasuk mention Avram? The answer, says Ma'aseh Hashem, is that Vayikra Sham means Avram. But by stating Avram explicitly, the Pasuk is emphasizing that by this stage, it was only Avram who was Vayikra B'Shem Hashem. As if to say, the earlier expression doesn't mention Avram by name, because although it refers to Avram, it's Avram and his team. It's Avram and his people. They're all involved. Avram leads, and they follow Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, including Lot. But now, Vayikra Sham Avram, meaning Avram and only Avram. Lot has been missing choir practice lately because he's not so much invested in Vayikra B'Shem Hashem anymore. And moreover, it leads to Machlokas. As if to say, when he's no longer in accord with Avram's plan, discord is in the offing. And you have this riv, you have this pasuk Zion again, Vayehi riv, Vein ro'eh mikne Avram, Vein ro'eh mikne Lot. And what is the measure of the machlokas? I mean, what's there to argue about in those days? Rashi explains, Vayehi riv, Lefi shehayu ro'av shalot rishoyim. Lot's shepherds were rishoyim, umarim behemtam, bestos acherim. They're allowing their animals to graze in other people's fields. The roe Avram mochichim osam ala gezel. Avram shepherd, upbraid them and rebuke them. That's gezel, it's not yours. So what do Lot's shepherds respond to that? A message clearly that they've received from Lot himself. Hey, Momim, no, it's not gezel. Why not? Nitna ha'aretz la'avram. It's a simple equation. The land has been given to Avram. Velo en Yerush, but Avram doesn't have any heir. So who's in line to inherit? Velo Yerusha. So Lot's in line to inherit. Ve'in ze gezel. And therefore it's not gezel. The land belongs to Avram. Lot says, the worst you can accuse me of is being ahead of myself, because I'm taking an advance on my inheritance. But the land of theirs, and I'm his heir. And that's why it's perfectly acceptable. But the pasuk concludes, Va'kanani va'prizi az yoshev ba'aretz. That's why the pasuk Zion concludes. Otherwise it seems to be something of a non sequitur. There's a machlokas between the shepherds and the Kanani are there. How is that relevant? Because that's a refutation of Lot's argument. Lot says the land belongs to Avram. It's not so. The Kanani and the Prizi are still there. Velo zocha ba'Avram adayin. Avram doesn't even own the land yet. So the beginning of Lot's position actually has no basis. Now, that's how Rashi explains. There is one problem. Rashi has stated clearly that Avram did not actually own Eretz Canaan. But if you look in the Gemara, as explained by Rashi, you will see that Avram is considered already to own Eretz Canaan. How does it come out? Interestingly, the Gemara there discusses the idea of Asherah. What's an Asherah? It's a tree. Well, the tree has its Avodah Zorah roots, pardon me. And under the tree could also be Avodah Zorah. And the point is, the Gemara in Maseches Avodah Zorah, Daf Nun Gimel, Amud Beis, states and claims that there should be no such thing as a tree in Eretz Yisrael when the Jewish people came in. That was forbidden on account of Avodah Zorah. For a simple reason, says the Gemara. You can't render something that's not yours forbidden as a result of Avodah Zorah. And the land did not belong to the population of Eretz Canaan. It belongs to Avram and his descendants, says the Gemara. And the land and anything attached to the land, mechuber lekarka, is kekarka, which means the trees, because they have the status of Eretz Yisrael, they cannot be rendered forbidden, because the land doesn't belong to the Canaani. It belongs to Avram and after him to his descendants. Now that Gemara flatly contradicts what Rashi says, that at that time the Canaani were there, Avram didn't own the land. In the future, his descendants were coming to that, Avram didn't own the land. The Gemara says that Avram owned the land. So did he or didn't he? That is the question. And the Perush Be'er Yosef really opens up this question, and in so doing opens up the Parsha for us. Because if we look carefully and properly at the relevant psukim, we will see that actually the land in the beginning of the parsha is promised to Avram twice. And let us see those two episodes, and then we'll get a sense of what the situation is. The first of those promises is in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Zion. So what does the pasuk there say? Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Zion. Avram has just arrived. Vayera Hashem al Avram, Vayomer lezarecha etin es haaretz hazos. Hashem appears to Avram and says, I will give this land to your descendants, and Avram builds a mizbeach. So that is the first haftacha, black on white, lezarecha etin es haaretz hazos. Okay. What is the second time that Avram is promised the land? In Perek Yud Gimel, let's see, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Or actually, yes, in Perek Yudim, Pasuk Yudalet, Hashem says to Avram, look in all directions, Safonu Vanegba, Kedma Vayama, Pasuk Tesvav, Kies Kol Haaretz Asher HaTorah, the entire land that you see, Lecha Et Nena, I will give it to you, Ulazaracha Ad Olam, and your descendants forever. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Kum Yishalach Baaretz, walk the land, walk through the land, La'arko La'rachba, its length, its breadth, Ki Lecha Et Nena, or I will give it to you. If we would compare and contrast these two promises, we would identify two split between them. Firstly, in the earlier promise in Perek Yud Beis, Hashem promises the land to Avram's descendants. Lezarecha etenes haaretz hazot. He doesn't say that he's giving it to Avram himself. Whereas, in the next Perek, he says twice in Pasuk Tesvav, Lecha etnena ulezarecha ad olam, I'm giving it to you and your descendants after you. And repeats in the end of Pasuk Yud Zayin, Ki lecha etnena. That is point of contrast number one. And number two, interestingly, the first promise is, shall we say, just that, a promise. Hashem says, I'll give the land to your descendants, and that's all he says. It's a pure promise. In contrast to that, the second promise is immediately followed by an implementation of that promise. Because, as the Gemara explains in Maseches Bava Basra, Daf Kuf, Amud Aleph, when Hashem says to Avram, Kum Yishalach Baaretz, walk the land, the length and the breadth of the land, it's not just for the mitzvah of walking through Eretz Yisrael. It is the process whereby Avram acquires the land. Walking through the land as the owner of the land is categorized by the Gemara as what's called Kinyan Chazaka, taking hold, a proprietal hold of the land, and that is what happens there. Well, what we see from here, if we are particular and if we're thorough, is that it happens to be that it is only with the second promise that the land actually becomes Avram's. I mean, we're just really restating what we said, but important for it to be formulated clearly. The first promise says that the land will be given to his descendant. It is only with the second promise that the land becomes Avram's. And we see this is accepted also throughout Chazal. That if we ever say that the land belongs to Avram, it's a result of the second promise, as a result of him walking through the land and acquiring it. Thus the Gemara famously says, for example, in Masechet Sanhedrin, Kuf Yud Aleph, Amud Aleph, it's quoted by Rashi in the beginning of the Eira. At the end of Parshat Shemos, Moshe comes back disappointed, because things have only gotten worse for Bnei Yisrael. We know the Psukim, from the time I came to power to speak in your name, he only brought evil to the people. You haven't even begun the salvation. That's Moshe complaining. And he paid for complaining. But he felt the pain of the Jewish people. They had to complain. But he was criticized for it nonetheless. And that's why Hashem then says, I appear to Avram, Yitzhak and Yaakov, Bekel Shakai, Ushmi Hashem Nanazati Lahem, and part of what that means is Hashem says to Avram in the famous words of the Gemara, Chaval al da'avdin velo mishtakhin. One bemoans the loss of those that are no longer with us, namely Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, because Hashem says they never complained if they didn't see the immediate fulfillment of the promises that I said to them. For example, says Hashem to Moshe, I told Avram, Kum Yishalach Baaretz. We note that reference. I said to Avram, Kum Yishalach Baaretz, means the land belongs to him. And you know what happened when he came to bury Sarah? He had to pay through the roof. And he's meant to own the land. He never complained. Very, very difficult and very demanding and exacting from Hashem to Moshe. That's between them. To say that you should have known better than to complain. Look at Avram. Avram didn't complain. And neither did Yitzhak, and neither did Yaakov. But what we do see is that when we say that the land belongs to Avram, it's as a result of the second promise. And moreover, as a result of him acquiring it post the second promise. Kum Yishalach Baaretz. In Avodah Zarah that we referred to before, about the Asherah, and the Gemara says there should be no such thing as an Asherah, the tree itself shouldn't be a problem because the land belongs to Avram. They can't render it forbidden if it doesn't belong to them. Rashi explained, it belongs to Avram because Hashem said, Lecha etnena ulezaracha. That's a quote from the second promise. There's no question about that. And therefore, when we come back to Rashi's explanation of Lot, Lot's practice was prior to the second promise. Our problem was, Rashi says, you're saying, well, the land belongs to Avram, and I'm his heir. And Rashi says, it doesn't belong to Avram. The Canaanite and the Perizzi are there. It doesn't belong to him. And our question is, doesn't the Gemara say that the land did belong to Avram? Says Ber Yosef, yes, but not yet. All Avram has received is the first promise for his descendants. The second promise is yet to come. And thus, Rashi says, at that stage, that was an unacceptable liberty on the part of Lot to have his shepherd's grave. It doesn't belong to him. But there's a further fascinating point. Because the truth is, even with Lot's argument, it still doesn't work. Again, to restate Lot's argument. Lot said, if you criticize me that my shepherds are grazing their flock wherever they want, I'll justify my actions in the following way. It's a two-stage process. Number one, the land belongs to Avram, which he claimed that it did. Okay, it didn't really, but okay, Lot is very zealous on Avram's behalf. Okay, the land belongs to Avram. And of course, after Avram, to his heir. But he doesn't have any children, which means I'm in line. And because I'm in line, so I'm taking an advance, and everything I'm doing is perfectly justified. QED, it's all airtight. There's just one problem. When Hashem said that he would give the land to Avram, he said he would give the land to Avram and to his descendants after him. Now, if that's true, and you believe, and you're following what Hashem said to Avram, then either way, you are out of the picture. Because the very same promise which says the land belongs to Avram said it also belongs to his descendants, which is a promise that Avram will have descendants. And although he doesn't have them yet, when he does, you are no longer his heir. So if you believe the promise, you're stealing. How could Lot respond to that? Lot's response is amazing. Lot's response is very simply, he doesn't have children. Not that. So I'm the one in line. You can say they'll have children, maybe yes, maybe no. I don't see any, so as far as I can tell, I'm the one in line. What's amazing about Lot's argument is that it contradicts itself. It's a kind of a pretzel shape, in the sense that the very source of him accessing other people's land is the source that should bar him from it. Because either he believes the promise, or he doesn't. But Lot says, why am I allowing my shepherds to graze? Because the land belongs to me. How do you figure? It belongs to Avram, and he who has me children. How do you know it belongs to Avram? Hashem said, well, Hashem also said he had children. Well, he doesn't have any children. Well, how do you know the land belongs to him? What do you mean? Hashem said. And basically, what Lot is doing, he is the first one on record to indulge in what is essentially a selective belief, which actually cannot hold. And it's a self-contradictory. But Lot doesn't mind, because Lot here is revealing to us that very often what a person believes in, it doesn't so much inform or lead to the life that they live, but rather is informed by the life that they live. As if to say, Lot has one goal in life, and that is to do what he wants, and if he feels that his shepherds should graze wherever they want, that's fine. What does he need to believe to allow that to be acceptable? The Lot says, well, I'll take a promise from God, cut it in two, discard half of it, embrace the other half, and I'm set. And Lot is not the last person to do that, but he's the first one in the Chumash. And there's much room, food for thought in terms of our relationships with our beliefs and the relationship between what we believe and what we do, which is the cause and which is the effect. But there is a further point. And that is, there's actually a great irony here. Lot says the land belongs to Avram. We know that's not true. Not yet. In time, it was promised to Avram. When was it promised and given to Avram himself? You know when? Let's have a look at the Pasuk Perek Yudalet Pasuk, Perek Yud Gimel Pasuk Yudalet states, Vashem Amar El Avram. Hashem said to Avram, Acharei he pored Lot Me'imo. After Lot had left him. That's when Hashem says, look in all directions, the land is yours. And the Pasuk emphasizes that Hashem said this to Avram after Lot had left him. Why is that emphasized? Because Hashem wouldn't say this to Avram when Lot was with him. But why not? Rashi says Hashem didn't want to talk to him when Arusha was with him. But the Maasei Hashem says that Hashem isn't giving him the land as long as Lot is with him, because as long as Lot is with him, he has not fully fulfilled the command of Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Mimoladetecha Umibeis Avicha. Lech Lecha says you've got to cut ties completely with your father's house. Avram didn't do that. He had his reasons. But we asked the question, was there any fallout from that? Were there any consequences? Here we see the consequences. It actually prevented Avram from acquiring ownership, from attaining ownership of Eretz Canaan. And it wasn't until Lot left him that he has finally fulfilled now Lech Lecha. And Hashem immediately appears to him, Acharei Pored Lot Me'imo, the land is now yours. So the amazing irony is, the only one prior to that stage who was acting as if Avram already owns the land was Lot. And Lot himself was the single impediment to Avram actually owning the land. Because as long as he was there, Avram didn't get the land. As soon as he left, Avram got the land. So he's actually in the way. But he acts as if he's already acting on Avram's ownership of the land. That's very interesting. And what remains for us just to ponder and reflect upon is Avram's behavior. Avram forfeits, so to speak, the prize of actually owning Eretz Canaan, and he feels that it's worth it, because if Lot wants to come with him, Avram is prepared to carry him and to keep him with him. Only as long as Lot is interested genuinely in following Avram's program. As soon as that's not true, then, and they're going their separate ways, ideologically, that's the point that they part ways geographically as well. And it's very interesting that the Pasuk gives us to understand that the machlokas between Avram's shepherds and Lot's shepherds, that's a symptom of a rift that really exists between Avram and Lot themselves. If Lot was really together with Avram, his shepherds wouldn't be acting any differently than Avram's shepherds. So what comes out in the field is actually an expression of a difference, a rift that already exists between Avram and Lot. And that is why Avram says to Lot, and we see the, such a delicate terminology, Avram says in Pasuk Ches of Perek Yud Gimel, Vayomer Avram Lot, Al not tehi meriva, let there not be a dispute, a rift, Beini uveinecha, between me and you, Uvein ro'ai, uvein ro'echa, and between my shepherds and your shepherds. That's interesting. As far as we're concerned, the only riv that exists is between the shepherds. Okay, listen, shepherds can sometimes have disputes between each other. Who's to say that represents a problem between Avram and Lot? It does represent a problem between Avram and Lot, because if Avram and Lot were in complete accord, so would their shepherds be. So what at the higher levels, if there's already a split, it will come out as a machlokas in the lower levels. And Avram says, we already are not seeing eye to eye. Perhaps we should actually part. And it's very interesting to point out, as the Ksava Kabbalah does, again, if we're careful in noting the phraseology, the Pasuk says, in Pasuk Zion, Vayehi Riv. Then we're in Mekne Avram. There was a Riv. And what's the meaning of the word Riv? A dispute. Avram, in the next Pasuk, says to Lot, Al not tehi miriva beini uveinecha. Let there not be a miriva between me and you. What's a miriva? A dispute. So now the question is, what's the difference between the word riv in Pasuk Zayin and miriva in Pasuk Ches? They both sound like the same thing, but Avram changed the expression. The reason why, says the Ksava Kabbalah, a dispute is a riv. Riv is an argument. But arguments come from somewhere. The source of the argument is called the miriva, because the mem at the beginning is the causative. Meriva is causing a riv. So Avram says, if there's a riv between our shepherds, it's because there's a meriva between me and you. And therefore the time has come to part ways. And they do, and the Pasuk says, Vayisalot Mikedem. And again, the Pasuk is indicating that not only did Lot, it's not only geographical scalar, but it's also an ideological one. As Rashi said, Nasa Mikadmono Shel Olam. Mikedem doesn't just mean from the east, it means Mikadmono Shel Olam, from Hashem, who preceded the world. It's a jarring phrase, because Hashem says to, Avram says to Lot, let's part ways. If I go left, you go right. If you go right, I go left. In terms of the Chumash, right and left are watchwords for north and south, because the person is always considered to be facing east. That's orientation. And therefore, right is to the south, left is to the north. So Avram says, you can either go to the north or to the south. And the Pasuk says, Lot traveled from the east. That wasn't on the menu. But because there's more to it than that, it's a question of moving away ideologically as well. So these are some very pertinent and very thought-provoking comments. And again, it comes from the Psukim to pay attention to how many times the land is promised to Abram. And is it the same each time? And what happens in between? What causes the difference between them? These are things that we glean from the Gedolei HaMefarshim. Well, let's move on. And I'd like to preface the next segment of the shir by referring to a very enigmatic statement of Chazal. It's in Bereishis Rabbah. It relates to Pasuk in Parshas Bereishis, actually. In Bereishis Perek Dalet, Perek Beis, Pasuk Dalet, which states, Eile toldos hashamayim v'haaret behi bar'am. These are the toldos, the emanations, v'shamayim v'haaret behi bar'am. B'yom asos Hashem Elokim eretz v'shamayim. Says the Medrash. The word behi bar'am is the one being scrutinized here. Says the Medrash, al tikri behi bar'am. Rather, Be'Avraham. If you look at the word Behi Baram, you'll see it has the same letters as Avraham. Now, as is often the case with the situations of Al Tikri, it is always correct and appropriate to ask in the appropriate way, why are Chazal telling me not to read it the way that it's written, but rather some other way? I'd like to read it as Behi Baram. That's how the Torah wrote it. That seems to be the correct way to read it. And yet, Chazal is saying, don't read it Behi Baram, read it Be'Avraham. What does that mean? It's also interesting that, as we mentioned, the Pasuk concludes, right, Behi Baram, V'yom asos Hashem Elokim, Eretz V'shamayim. Why is that of note? Because that Pasuk mentions Eretz first, and then Shamayim. Whereas, if we start at the beginning, Bereishis Bara Elokim, Esa Shamayim, Vesa Aret. So apparently, the formation of things began with Shamayim and then Aret. But here the Pasuk says, V'yom asos Hashem Elokim, Eretz V'shamayim. Well, let us see. There is a very interesting statement in the Gemara in Maseches Brachos, and that's line number base. It's in the name of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. And that is, says the Gemara, Miyom Shebora HaKadosh Baruch Hu Olam, from the day that Hashem created the world, Lo Haya Adam Shekara'o Adon. There was no one who actually called him master. Ad Shebo Avram Shekara'o Adon. Until Avram came. Avram was the first one to call Hashem master. Where do we see this? Well, in Perik Tesvav, in the Brisbane Abbasarim, Perik Tesvav, Pasuk Ches. Perik Tesvav, Pasuk Ches. We're in the thick of the Brisbane Abbasarim. Vayomar, Avram said, Hashem Elokim, there you have it, Hashem Elokim, Aleph Dalet Yud, Vamo'eda Ki Irashena. How will I know that I will inherit the land? Whatever that question means, which is its own discussion. But what we do see, says the Gemara, is that Avram calls Hashem Adon, calls him the master, and he was the first one. Interestingly, we're always mindful that if there's an idea to be derived from the Chumash, it should be derived from the earliest possible source. Was there an earlier time that that Avram spoke to Hashem in this way? It happens to be that there was. Not too far before this, And that is in Pasuk Beis. Pasuk Beis of that very same Perek, that's six Pesukim earlier. By Yomer Avram, Hashem Elokim. Exactly the same. Addresses Hashem in exactly the same way. Hashem Elokim. Matiteni, what will you give me? I'm going childless, etc. So Tosfos asked the question, why did we seemingly deliberately miss out or forego the first opportunity of Pasuk Beis and say the first time was Pasuk Ches? That's a good shaila. I mean, it's hard to miss. You start from the beginning of the chapter. This, says Tosfos, is further evidence of the tradition that we have from Chazal that actually the Bris Ben HaBesorim did not take place after the beginning, chronologically, after the beginning of Lech Lecha, but rather the Bris Ben HaBesorim took place when Avram was of 70 years of age. That is why the Pasuk in Parshat Bo says that we were in Mitzrayim for 430 years. It is the 400 years from the birth of Yitzhak, plus the 30 years prior to that, from when Avram was 70 years old, that that he was told about all of this. And therefore, says the Tosfos, Pasuk Zion, which is actually the Bris Ben HaBesorim, is when the Bris Ben HaBesorim starts. Tosfos invoked the concept of a Nukdam Mu'ucha Batorah. Chronologically, this was when in Pasuk Ches, when Hashem says, when Avram says Hashem Elokim, that he is saying that at the age of 70. Whereas earlier in the Perek, it's written earlier in the Perek, but it happened later in his life, post the 75, when he came in Lech Lecha, and therefore that is actually, historically, the second event. Okay, that's Tosfos making Seder for us, or more correctly, noting the lack of Seder chronologically in the Pesukim. But there is a deeper problem, and that is, aside from an earlier Pasuk in this Perek, there are earlier people in the Torah who called Hashem by his name, who referred to Hashem by his name. In the Pasuk, you find Noah says, Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem. That's it, that's Noah. Noah said that before Abram. Why then is Abram credited as the first person to have referred to Hashem by name when Noah is said before him? And moreover, there are Midrashim, it's not in the Pasuk, but there are Midrashim that Adam also addressed Hashem by name. Hashem asked him, what is my name? He told Hashem what his name was, whatever that means. So Adam called Hashem by name, Noah called Hashem by name, and Abram is called the first one to call Hashem by name. How can it be? And Tosfos responds and explains that when the Gemara says Abram was the first one to call Hashem by name, it means he was the first one to call him with the name Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. For the earlier personalities, Noah and Adam, when they say Hashem, they are saying, calling him with Yud Kei Vav Kei. And the question, therefore, Abram is the first one to call him Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, Adam, the master. The question, of course, is, what does this mean? Why is it so significant that they had referred to Hashem with Yud Kei Vav Kei, Adam and Noah, that is, whereas Abram, he found a new name, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. The Meshech Chochma, in the beginning of Parshas B'Chukosai, explains that what these different names reflect are different ways that Avram related to Hashem or came to connect with Hashem as opposed to Adam and Noah. Adam, his original connection with Hashem was by virtue of the fact that Hashem spoke to him. Hashem addressed him and told him which trees to eat from, which trees not to eat from, who revu, etc. That's a direct connection. Similarly, and moreover, Adam carries with him an awareness of Hashem as creator who addressed him, and he passed it on to his descendants, and then it goes to Chanoch and to Shelah. Noah is an heir to all of that, and to his credit, he remains a tzaddik, etc., and Hashem speaks to him. What that means is the way that Adam and then subsequently Noah come to be aware of Hashem is because they come to hear from him. And when they hear from him, they directly therefore receive communication from the creator of the world. Avram had a very different track. As we know, the Gemara tells us, the Midrashim tell us, Rambam speaks about it in Hilchos Avodah Zarah. Somehow the Mesorah and an awareness of Hashem was lost in the world. And Avram himself, in the beginning, he was not conscious of Hashem. But then he began thinking. He got to thinking. And he's looking at the sun and the moon and the clouds and the wind and the day and the night and the whole thing. And he looks at the world and he sees the order of the world tells him that someone is running it. Once that happens, Hashem then appears to him and says, that was very worthy and valid, his investigations, and that leads him up to Hashem. It's almost, one could say, the difference is that with Adam and Noah, down to them, they received awareness of Hashem. Avram developed it, and he developed it not because he received something from heaven, but rather he developed it upwards from observing the earth and phenomenon in this world. And that led him upwards. An appreciation of the world by pondering the world as being created is what is alluded to and communicated by the word behi bar'am. Back to that pasuk in Bereishis. Eile todas Hashemayim v'aretz behi bar'am, when they were created. Because it reflects an appreciation of the world as something that must have been created. The focus is on the world as a created entity. And that's what that pasuk is communicating there. And that is why the Medrash said, behi bar'am, al tikri behi bar'am, ela be'avraham. The pasuk isn't telling me to read the pasuk, the Medrash isn't telling me to read the pasuk incorrectly. But what the Medrash is saying is, if you wish to get a full understanding of what behi bar'am, be mindful of the fact that it can also be read as Abraham, because Abraham is the person who applied and developed the concept of behi bar'am. Because he looked at the world and concluded that it must be created. That's behi bar'am. And that is why in that pasuk, when it says behi bar'am, it continues, b'yom asos Hashem Elokim Eretz v'shamayim. It mentions the earth before the heavens. Because that's what behi bar'am is all about. Chronologically, the first pasuk in Bereishis tells us that first Hashem made the heavens and then the earth. But that's going from upwards downwards, which is how it happened. But Avram came to intuit and understand it actually from going downwards upwards. And therefore, in terms of what behi bar'am represents, pondering the world in that way, that's why the pasuk mentions first Eretz and then Shamayim. And this is why, this is, says Meshech Chochma, is the meaning behind Tosfos's observation, that although Noach and Adam had also addressed Hashem by name, but they addressed him by Yudke Vavke, which is the name of existence, because they were aware of him as having brought everything into existence. He communicated with them, and they had that Masorah. Whereas for Avram, he was the only one who looked at the world and said, the world must have a master, the world must be guided, and the guide of that world, the master of that world, is Hashem as Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. And that's why we say Avram was the first person to call him like that. It's very interesting to mention, just as a postscript, it is related that there was a certain sefer, I believe it was a commentary on the Siddur. I forgot to look up exactly which commentary it was, by a contemporary of the Vilna Gaon, someone who lived in the time of the Gaon. And they brought the sefer to the Gaon himself, to get to see what he thinks of it. Is it a worthy sefer? So he opened it up at the beginning. And the first page of this commentary on the sefer, well, what are you going to comment on? You comment on the beginning. The beginning is Adon Olam. And this commentary said that the Minad Yisrael is that chakras begins with Adon Olam. Why would that be appropriate? Of course, not inappropriate, but why is it? That's how it begins, Adon Olam. So this commentary says, the reason why the Siddur begins, Shachris begins Adon Olam, is because Shachris, as we know, Tfilos Avos Tiknum, right? Shachris, Mincha, and Ma'ariv were instituted by the three Avos, and Shachris was instituted by Avram. And therefore, when we daven Shachris, we're davening the Tfilah that corresponds to Avram, that was instituted by Avram. And Avram, as the Gemara tells us, was the first person to refer to Hashem as Adon. As Tosfos explained, as we begin Avram's tefillah we start by addressing Hashem Et Adon Olam. And it is reported that the Vilna Gaon reacted to this and said he doesn't need to read the rest of the Sefer. So whatever the rest of the commentary is, it is what it is. It doesn't matter. The entire publication is justified for this one Perush. He felt it was a very mystic appearance, which is very interesting. Firstly, the point of Chizuk for anyone else who writes a Sefer, although one tries to get more than one thing of a worthy thing, but we do also see it's not a particularly complex idea. It's actually rather simple, but the Vilna Gaon is teaching us that complexity and profundity do not always define each other. If it rings true and it has that emes, so the Gaon, the whole Sefer is worth it for that. That's Adon Olam. Let us conclude just by referring to a very interesting psukim at the end of the parsha, the changing of the names of Avram and Sarai to Avraham and Sarah. Of course, these psukim are well known to us. The developments are well known. And that is in Perek Yud Zayin Pasukei. But as we'll see once again, if we are medakdek in the psukim and particular and meticulous, we'll notice things that perhaps we did not notice prior to them. Perek Yud Zayin Pasukei. Hashem says to Avram, you are no longer called Avram. Rather, Vayashim Chavram. What is the meaning behind this change of name? Hashem tells him, Ki Av Hamon Goyim Mithaticha. Because I have placed you and set you up as the father of a multitude of nations. So the extra hay, the hay with the existing mem is for Hamon. Av Hamon Goyim Mithaticha. And Rashi explains. Originally, Avram's name was Avram, Aleph Beis Resh Mem, and Av, of course, is father, and what's Ram? Av La'aram. That means he was a father, a guide, an inspiration, role model for Aram, a patron of Aram. But now, he's expanding to not just Aram, but Av Hamon Goyim. Aha. So now the question is, if he's changed from being Av to Aram only, to Av to Hamon Goyim, so why is the Reish that was originally there in Aram, but the Reish is there for Aram, but he's no longer just for Aram, it's actually Hamon Goyim, which includes everything, so he should be called, that will sound strange to us, but he should be called Avham, because he's Av Hamon Goyim. Why is the Reish still there? And this question is actually addressed by Rashi. And Rashi's explanation, or more correctly, Rashi's comment, is actually quite fascinating. Because Rashi says, originally, Bitchila, he was only Av La'aram. That's very restrictive. Just Aram. But now he's Av L'chol Ha'olam. So then says Rashi, Va'afilu Reish Shehoibo Bitchila, what about that Reish? You know, it's still there. But it's no longer seemingly giving us the message. Lo Zozo Mimakoma. It didn't move. That's it. It didn't move. But then Rashi explains the situation. She'af Yudshel Sarai, this is a well-known medrash, consider, says Rashi, when Sarai's name gets changed from Sarai to Sara, there was trouble. The Yud of Sarai, Nisra'ama ala Shechina, it complained, it protested to the Shechina that it would be removed from Sarai's name, and it wasn't placated or mollified ad she'osifa le'Yoshua until Hashem told him, presumably it was told in advance, or maybe it wasn't told, but it doesn't matter, it was relocated to the beginning of Yoshua, because there was originally Hosea, and then he's Yoshua. These are very, very obviously lofty and mysterious ideas. But really, says Rashi, you know, if you want to understand why the Reish of Avram, even though it's no longer communicating an idea, but it didn't go anywhere, and therefore you'd think, so maybe it should just go missing, says Rashi, for letters of the names of the Ovis to go missing is no simple matter. They have a great deal of staying power. Just take a look at what an upheaval it was when that Yud of Sarai, until you found a place for it, it wasn't going anywhere. And apparently, says Rashi, but there is no place for the Reish of Avram, and therefore it didn't go anywhere. So in other words, our axioms here need to be reappraised. because we look only at the meaning, and if there's no meaning, there should be no letter. But Rashi's telling us the presence of a letter in the name of one of the others means a great deal more. They don't move so easily. Very interesting. And thus it remains Avraham, and how many of those letters teach us the meaning? The first two and the last two. And the one in the middle, it's got tenure. Chazal, in the Medrash, have a different explanation. Purely Alderach HaRemez. Purely Alderach HaMedrash. And that is, say, Chazal, in terms of the pshat, meaning Av HaMon Goyim, you don't need the resh. But you do need it, and the reason why is because it communicates something else. What it communicates is the idea that Avram, the level that he achieved and attained was that he attained mastery over all the parts of his body. All those faculties, all the parts of his body. There are 248 limbs. Ramach Ivarim. Avraham is a gematria of Resh Mem Ches, 248. And therefore the Resh has no message in terms of Pshat. Its message is purely in the realms of Drash, that is to say, the gematria for the level of Avraham. Resh Mem Ches Mitzvah. Which is a chiddush in many respects, and that's the Medrash. The Alshich, interestingly, takes a middle ground. He also sees that the Resh is giving us a gematria idea, but it is nonetheless connected to something in the Parsha. Because again, if we look carefully at the Psukim, let us see, in Pasuk Vav, when Hashem says, after he's told him his name will be Avram, he says, V'ifreis yoscha b'mod, Mod, I will increase you exceedingly, unasaticha l'goyim, I'll make you into nations, umalachim imcha yitzeir, kings will come out from you. Now, that means Pasuk Vav is about what will come out from Avram. So my question, says the Alshich, is if you have a look in Pasuk Beis of Perek Yud Zayin, so Pasuk Beis reads, Ve'etnav b'si b'nei v'necha, I'll place my covenant between you, this is Perek Yud Zayin, it's the Perek of Mila, Ve'etnav b'si b'nei v'necha, I'll place my covenant between you, Ve'arbe oscha b'ma'od ma'od, I will increase you exceedingly. Which means that the exceedingly great increase of Avram is a function of the bris, and it's in Pasuk Beis. Now, subsequently, Hashem says to Avram, Avram, your name will be Avram because you are the father of many nations. Avram and Goyim. That seems to be a separate thing. But then Pasuk Vav goes back to talk about Avram's descendants. There'll be nations from you, there'll be kings from you. But that seems to go back to Pasuk Beis about how Avram will increase and what will happen. It doesn't seem to be a function, so to speak, of the change of Avram to Avraham. But apparently it is. Because really what Hashem is saying is that before the change of his name, so he'll have many descendants. But now Hashem is saying, not just many descendants, they will become many nations. And there will be monarchies there. Goyim, nations, malachim, kings, that's also part of the name change. How? There's the Alshich, if you do the arithmetic, and you take a look at the word goyim, and the word malachim, and combine them together with a differential of one, which is acceptable, what's called the kolel, they come to 200. Goyim plus Malachim equals 199, with the kolel is 200, and that is what the resh is there for. In other words, the Avham of Avraham is for the first part of the development from that name, Avham on Goyim. But the resh of Avraham is for what comes next. Nesaticha l'goyim, nesaticha l'malachim l'chayetzeir. Goyim and Malachim, they come from the resh, and that's how the Alshich explains the presence of the Resh. It is telling us something, and moreover, it's telling us something, although in Remez form, but it is an allusion to something which is explicit in the Pasuk as a development and as a result from the change of Avram. Now, another interesting question as we move from Avram's name change to Sarah's name change. She goes from Sarai to Sarah. And that is in Pasuk Tesvav. Perek Yud Zayin. Pasuk Tesvav. Vayem Elokim al Avraham, he is now Avraham. Sarai Ishtecha, lo tikra es Shema Sarai. Do not call her Sarai. Ki Sarai Shema, because her name is Sarah. So what's interesting is, in this Pasuk, as Sarai's name is changed to Sarah, Avraham is told not to call her Sarah. Torah. Now earlier on, the pasuk hey that we referenced, and again to see it, pasuk hey said, "V'lo yikarei od eshimcha Avram, your name will no longer be called Avram. Vayashimcha Avraham, your name will be Avraham." So it's interesting at the point of contrast, and I think it does occur to us this, because it rings differently, that when it came to Avram's, comes to Avram's change of name, Hashem said, "Your name will no longer be called Avram," meaning no one will call you Avram, because your name will be Avraham. When it comes to Sarai, the parallel phraseology should have been, her name will no longer be called Sarai, but rather Sarah. But Hashem doesn't say, "V'lo yikarei shema Sarai." He says, "Lo tikra shema Sarai." You don't call her Sarai. But the question is, can someone else call her Sarai? I mean, no one can, because it's not her name anymore. So why is it that the cessation of referring to Avram as Avram is referred to is general, Lo Yikarei, in terms of the name, but for Avram, for Sarai is specifically something that Avram shouldn't do. That's a good shine. And the answer, says the Bionis and Ibishis, is, you know, if you go back to the where we first meet Sarai, which is in the end of Parshas Noah, when Avram and Nahor get married, so the pasuk says that Avram marries Sarai, who's the daughter of Haran. Right? Nahor marries Milcah, Avram marries Sarai, who's the daughter of Haran. Avi Milcah, Avi Yiscah, the father of Milcah and Yiscah. So now, how many people are there here? He marries Sarai, and someone else marries Milcah. Nahor marries Milcah, daughters of Haran, the father of Milcah and Yiscah. So Yiscah, in the end, is Sarai. Why is she called Yiscah? Rashi says she was very beautiful. Everyone used to look at her. And that's called Socha, right? Socha is to gaze. But then the question is, so is she Yiscah or is she Sarai? I mean, this is really the first time that we have someone with two names that way. Ibisha says, it appears that actually most people called her Yiscah. I mean, that was her apparent name. Because everyone looked at her, and that the name she was known as Yiscah. But Avram called her Sarai, because Sarai means my princess, and my noble woman, Sarai. Because really what he's saying is, whereas other people may notice other attributes of her, but for him, he values her actual worth. And therefore, says Ibionis and Abishas, it could be Alder Chapshat, that no one ever really called her Sarai except for Avram. Because everyone else just called her Yiscah. Which means that when her name gets changed from Sarai to Sarah, it doesn't really affect anyone else because no one else was calling her Sarai anyway. They'll call her Yiscah. Maybe they carry on calling her Yiscah. What are you going to do? It's only Avram who would ever call her Sarai. And therefore Hashem says, don't call her Sarai anymore. Because her name is Sarah. You know, the critical emphasis on the change is for the only one who actually got her name right. That she's Sarai. And now she's Sarai. Look, Tikra Shema Sarai, Ki Sarai Shema. Just a final point, again, just to see how these things, so many layers and dimensions at play here. Another difference between them. Hashem says, your name will no longer be Avram. Vayashimcha Avraham. Your name will be Avraham. When it comes to Sarai, Hashem says, don't call her Sarai. Ki Sarah Shema, because her name is Sarah. Really? When did that happen? I mean, you can say it's about to happen, but it sounds like it's already happened. So again, it's a nuance, but it's a difference. Why is it that with regards to Avram, it's a transition, and we're told it was one way, and now it will be a different way. You're no longer Avram. You will be Avraham. But when it comes to Sarai, don't call her Sarai. Her name is Sarah. Well, not yet. I mean, maybe now, but it sounds like it's already Sarah, if you hear the inflection. So the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says, yes, because this bears out a parallel medrash with regards to the Yud of Sarah. The Yud of Sarah really had a lot of experiences here, because the Medrash tells us that the Yud of Sarai actually, you know, we think about, where did the Yud of Sarai go? It went wherever it went, because letters have to go, they've got to come from somewhere. So then the question is, well, Avram got a hay added to his name. Where did that come from? Who gave him a hay? Who had a hay on their name, and then you got it from there. So the Medrash says that actually the hay of Avram is half of the Yud of Sarai. In other words, she was originally Sarai, but Sarai, of course, that Yud is 10. But there were two hays that needed to come down, so to speak. The hay that's added from Avram to make him Avram, and the hay to be at the end of Sarah. Those two hays are the product of that Yud dividing. So the Al-Sheikh says that that Medrash is actually borne out by the phraseology of the Pasuk, because Hashem says, you're no longer will be called Avram. Your name will be Avram. And at that point, he named him Avram. But by naming him Avram, he automatically had already changed Sarai's name to Sarah. Because if Avram is now Avraham, that means that the Yud from Sarai has lost a hay and retained a hay. And that means that's already happened. Therefore, by the time Hashem comes to talk about Sarai, he doesn't say her name will be Sarah. It's already Sarah, because you've just become Avram. Ki Sarah Shem. These are the comments of the Al-Sheikh. And so we see from the very Pshat to the very Remez and much in between, plenty to say and plenty yet to say. We'll leave it over there.